All right, quickly here, the checklist for grace giving, the right objects. That's easy sometimes and not so easy other times. You just got to work it out in your life. Again, we're not just talking about money, but that obviously stands at the top of the list. We're talking about other things people do to benefit others in their time of need, to rally to them. And God will put those people in front of you. Could even be an enemy or someone that isn't really thrilled with you. Put it that way. That you get a chance to do good to them. Opportunity. You don't go looking for it because that's cranking stuff up. It'll come naturally to you. It's one of the things we learn. You have to have the right objects. You identify that through doctrine. Realizing there are a lot of people out here that are, strictly speaking, hitting on people for money. Regular cycle of stuff. Calling the church, want us to take care of their utility bills. The large percentage of the time, I say no. That's not why this church exists. To pay the utility bills of people in Oklahoma City. That's not a part of our mandate and a part of what God has established us for. But on occasion, we have helped people that are completely on the outside with no prospect that they're going to attend here. It's just good works towards people from time to time. I never answer the phone if it says red carpet in. I have in the past, and I've regretted it. Nobody ought to have that much trouble. I have the phone out here. It goes on and on and on. I'll give you the $25 if you'll shut up. You know, another night in a motel. Well, yeah, right. We're not in the business of sending people off into the world either. You're in the right place. You just don't know it. The right objects, the right mental attitude, that with all applications of doctrine, you have to step back, get in fellowship, and do this task, pleasant or unpleasant, enjoyable or not, and do it in fellowship. You'll be surprised, of course you know, you've done it, how much easier it goes. You're doing it not as unto men, you're doing it as unto the Lord. And you're His servant. And this is what He puts in front of you. That's why Abraham was a blessing to those around him. And you know he ran into a lot of people in his life traveling around the land and had contact with a lot of people. And he was a blessing. And it was noted that by people that he was. It's a witness, what people do with it. Well, nothing we can do about that. Determining the right amount. We have... You know, if people really are into this, like prayer, you know, I just did the doctrine of prayer, people are really into this, they're really going to be exploiting something big time. Yes, we do our basic prayers. That's how a lot of believers just get by. And that's fine. It's better than nothing, obviously. But the real exploitation and the benefits that can come as a result of these things, prayer to me is a huge, in some respects, not how you go about it, but it's a mystery. You know, why would you pray for something you know is going to be there anyway? Because God said to. And it's for your benefit. Why do I pray that your kingdom will come? It's going to come. If I never open my mouth on that prayer one more time and every believer shuts down and doesn't pray for it, it's going to happen. But we do pray for it. It's to our benefit to pray for it. There are all these side benefits. You're building up eternal rewards when you're doing something like praying. It's good works. It's divine good production. And so the same thing with giving. Pray that God will bless your mental attitude and give you so you can start off and be involved in this. And again, while this doctrine focuses primarily on money, the idea is that there are other things you can give of your time, visit the sick, help people in times of need, we've helped people out in this church, and it's not been something that necessarily the board rallied anyone to. This is something that was done ad hoc. Some believer says, knew this believer was moving here, knew they need a place, knew they need some furniture and stuff. Before you knew it, and it just went through the grapevine, and we and a number of people contributed pieces of furniture, and this person had a whole place full of furniture. And I had a place all set up for them. Those kind of things have been done. Things I don't even know about, obviously. So we're sensitive as a family, not as to the highest level we could possibly be, but we are sensitive to the legitimate needs of positive volition. And again, they're not always just monetary. Your giving should be systematic, not spotty, especially when you're dealing with supporting the local church. Again, you may not have much, and I'm not asking. Paul even said, you poor believers, you don't have to contribute to this Jerusalem offering thing. You Macedonian Christians, you can opt out, and you'll be okay. There wouldn't be a problem. Guess what they did? They stepped up and did it anyway. You know, I've always said with regard to people, where there's a will, there's a way. You can imagine what people can do if they determine they want to do it, even for their own selfish interest. So how much more if you want to do it in a spiritual way? And God has given to us generously. No kidding. I mean, I'm just blown away by the blessings. I don't take my grace and time on the physical level. I don't take any of that for granted. I don't take it for granted. I know where it came from. It came from God. So we in turn are to be generous. Again, you will have insight with regard to a given situation. Okay, this isn't for those of you who have been involved in Christian circles have heard about tithing. It's a 10% tax. Grace giving is not a tax. It's what every man purposes in his or her own heart. It's between you and God. It isn't a church. Are we dictating a specific amount, like what I was first exposed to? Trying to get 10% out of everybody. So tithing was a system of taxation under the Mosaic Law. And yeah, there were Jews that violated it. So what? It was a system of taxation. And what was that tax? And the money collected from that tax, as far as I can tell, well, the first primary thing it was to support one whole tribe. 11 tribes supporting one tribe. The priests, the ones providing spiritual things for the nation. They had a lot of work to do. It wasn't some little easy. They had to run the tabernacle. They had to run whatever. They had a lot of effort and work. And this money was to be just however they did that. I don't know. But it was a taxation to support the Levitical priesthood, all the way from the high priest all the way down the ladder, so that they could minister in spiritual things and the rest of the nation could get out there and work in their line of work and have 10% thrown at this one tribe. You know, if they all did it right, you can imagine how much that would be. It would be a lot. So it was a system of taxation to support the articulators, the communicators, the promoters of the law, to get that in front of Israel. So there were priests in every community around the tribes. They all couldn't be in Jerusalem, obviously. So they were scattered. That was the tribe that had no territory. They did not have a tribal territory. They lived in and among the Jews of the 12 tribes. So how did this come over into the church? Since grace giving is voluntary, and grace giving is never associated in the New Testament with a percentage, tithing is not authorized. If you want to give 10%, that's fine. But don't do it thinking you are doing it based on this Old Testament taxation thing. You know, let everyone purposes in his heart. How's that fit with tithing? It doesn't. it ought to just, Paul should have just said, everybody needs to be given 10%. Nowhere, but nowhere in any of the epistles is this made an issue of. Giving is, but not this form of giving that we typically associate with some of our fundamentalist churches. So people just make up stuff. Like there's one denomination or group that there's four offerings taken up a month, typically, maybe five, but four offerings taken, and the pastor gets one of them, the totality of it. Well, let's rally everybody on that weekend. So where do they get that? They just make it up. And it's called tithing. And the church promotes tithing to boot. So you get a nice salary based on about 1,000 people. Tithing. Gave of their own accord or voluntary. 2 Corinthians 8:8. I'm not speaking this as a command. Again, context tells. Abraham's tithing to Melchizedek was a type of a tax. It was kind of a foreshadowing. Because and somehow it was 10%. Where'd they get the 10% thing? This is way before the law. The institution of the Mosaic Law and this that every Israelite was supposed to participate in this and give 10% of their yearly income. It got a lot heavier, the tax, when they started getting kings. It almost doubled if it didn't. But you wanted a king, you're going to take care of him. He's not going to be in a shabby little place sitting over here and say, I'm a king. You got to have a king. Then he said, this is the stuff. And even with that prospect, because he has some freedoms that you may not like. And he can bring your sons and daughters in here to serve him. Do you want this? Yeah, we want a king. We want to be like the other nations. So out of a big lust thing, they got him a king. It's funny how God works things out. But anyway, Abraham's tithing to Melchizedek was a tax. And 10% was not even his money. Abraham tithed to Melchizedek. Demonstrating a number of things. Demonstrating that the priesthood of Melchizedek was superior to Abraham's status. The lesser, office-wise. I'm not talking about spiritually. Office-wise, position-wise, in the chain of things. Tithing to the greater. And so Abraham basically takes 10% of the booty from Sodom and Gomorrah and gives it to Melchizedek. He wouldn't take only funds he would take from it is to pay his men. They delivered your fannies from this mess. You're going to pay them. But I don't want this. Because there's sometimes you just know as a believer, that's not a source I want to be prospered by. And I don't want to be prospered by a clown and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah that said, I made Abraham rich. I want everybody to say, Yahweh made me rich. And Yahweh made him rich. So he turned down, it was a phenomenal amount of wealth. All the king of Sodom and Gomorrah and those people wanted was to take their people back and start over. You can have all this stuff. Which, of course, the invaders who came in there cherry-picked this stuff. You know, if you're gonna haul off all this stuff, you don't want every pot and pan, crying out loud. You don't want junk. You don't want you want good stuff. That's what they do. They take the good stuff. Why wouldn't they? So Abraham takes a tenth of that and gives it to this king who's over in what we now know as Jerusalem, who happened to be a Canaanite, a Jebusite Canaanite category, who was a high priest, but he was righteous. And this is another mystery I see in the Bible. You have these examples of, see, priesthood existed through all the nations. Pagan priesthood existed all through the nations. But here we have this one, and he didn't take this on himself. God made him a priest, revealed himself to him, and made him a king priest. Two offices in one. And that's the order of priesthood that Jesus Christ holds, the king priest. He didn't get his priesthood through natural birth. he'd had to be a Levite. He got his kingship through birth in the right tribe, in the right line, the tribe of kings, Judah. He got his priesthood by divine appointment, which God is free to do. But it was not an Aaronic priesthood. Aaronic priesthoods, they died when the priest died. That ended it. He doesn't go on being a priest forever. Jacob tried to bribe God with a tenth in Genesis 28:18-22. Interesting passage. Believers do. Let me put this way: good believers. We're gonna deal with good believers, okay? We're gonna deal with dummy believers. That's easy. We're gonna deal with good believers. Get weird ideas. They're gonna do something that isn't of God, but you know, it's what it is. That's a long time ago. It feels like that I taught that. So I may not be as up on it as I need to be, but bear with me. Again, you can't use money to manipulate God. That's stupid. He doesn't need your money. You can manipulate people, but not God. So Jacob arose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. This is the same stone where Jacob slept when he was fleeing the land, and he comes back. He called to the name of the place Bethel, or previously the name of the place had been Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, "If God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take, and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, I'll return to my father's house in safety. Then the Lord will be my God. The stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and all that I will give, I will surely give a tenth to you." I don't think any of that is on the up and up. Why in the world do you have to make a deal with God? He's already made a deal with you. He's already told you, "I'll be with you," and everything is laid out in front of you. This whole thing smacks of pretension, lack of faith. But Jacob was this kind of a character, this flip-flop. He could flip-flop quicker than you could even get it. He could be in one mode 1 minute, and the next he's in the right one. You saw that when Esau was coming up. He goes through all these antics, and then he settles down and prays and does the right thing. Jacob is a very interesting character. You will find one. You'll be hard pressed to find one quite like him. One thing I say about the three patriarchs: they may have some things in common, you know, in their personalities, but they were different, very different people. If you'd met them, you'd walked away with a completely different impression of 1, 2, and 3. Not bad necessarily, just different impression. So the principle of liberality again and grace giving. The word encourages a generous mental attitude. Freely you've received, freely give. Generosity is not expected or commanded, especially when people are poor. 2 Corinthians 8:1-3. If you're poor and you're broke and you're struggling, we don't want to wait on this. But again, if you want to step up like the Macedonians and do it anyway, we can't stop you. We'll take it. But they actually begged Paul to let them take up the collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem. See, that's the right heart. That's the kind of heart you're looking for. A heart of compassion. They didn't know these people. They wasn't friends and family and relatives and acquaintances. There's nothing. They didn't know. They wouldn't meet one on the street. They wouldn't know these people. So, anyway, in this connection, now, brethren, we wish to make known to you. See, Paul drops this on the Corinthians. One could say to guilt them because they weren't applying, but to throw this in their face. They needed to know that their Greek counterparts, Christian, in northern Greece, applied, and they were dragging their feet. So what Paul's trying to do, that you see this theme with the Corinthian, trying to get them over the hump. Just do the right thing here. You can still do the right thing here. Now all is lost. You haven't done the right thing with the incestuous Corinthian, but there's still opportunity. Strike one, strike two. Oh, you hit the ball. Strike three. You hit it. That's fine. You look bad on strikes one and two, but you nailed number three. Fine. You're okay. You're fine. You stepped up. Push came to shove. The Corinthians would rally. So that's how I see them. I believe a church too has its own personality. Now it alters as new people come and go, but a church has its own personality, kind of like a person, good and bad, its own personality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this, not as we'd expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord. What's that mean? They gave themselves to the Lord. And to us by the will of God. Okay. So there's a great example of some who were actually told, no, you don't have to. I understand your situation. See, that's sensitivity. We don't want trying to get blood out of a turnip here. You people are just doing good to make it in your own lives personally. So we're not asking you for anything. The Macedonians said, we're going to do it because we are committed to God. I wonder how you'll have to ask a Macedonian in phase three, how did things go for this church after they made this application under duress? I don't mean that kind of duress, arm twisting. I mean just your conditions, and you did it anyway. People amaze you from time to time. It's legitimate to let needs be made known. The example is Paul announcing the need for the Jerusalem Relief Fund to the Gentiles. And I had already covered that. The church should avoid all forms of coercion like gimmicks, legalism. Somebody's telling me they read in the paper that a church is, to draw people in, was giving away a free car. Well, it wasn't a new car, but it was a car. And they got so many people in there for their little drawing. Do five cars. And they rationalize this by saying, well, Jesus fed the multitude so he could get it. He didn't feed those people so he could witness to them, number one. He fed them because they were hungry. And they had been following him, and they needed food. And they had come a long ways from their homes. So he wasn't trying to draw people in. See me on the Mount of Olives at noon, and I'll feed you all. And of course, this goofy church with a pastor cites that, Jesus feeding the multitude, as legitimizing. These people have lost their minds. I mean, it's just whacked out. You can't, you know. So they didn't give everybody a car. Hey, what is this? This is gimmickry. I get all the time. Fundraisers. They want me to give them money so they can set up a fundraiser so we can get more money for our church. Hit the road. Here we go. Fundraisers. And then they take money from the cosmos to boot. Unbelievers, negative volition. Stand on street corners, stand in front of Walmart. One guy come up to one of my church members back in the day and waving his cup, and he usually just walks by these people. He just looked him in the eye and says, that is wrong. I went on into the store. Pretty soon the guys come in there to him and says, sir, I know it is. I have not liked doing this at all. Well, go home. Drop it. He was bullied by a church into doing this. Going out and raising money from anybody that walks into Walmart. That is wrong. We do not take funds from the cosmos. And we will not let any of the cosmos manipulate us in any way. Our own church members, let alone the cosmos. If they want to have their way and they contingent on money, you take your money. You know what you can do with it. Because we are not going to be manipulated by this thing. People have given money in the past, said we would like to do this. We look into it. No, we're not going to put up two flagpoles out there. I have the Christian flag and the U.S. flag on it and have to deal with that. It sends a wrong message. We're not doing that. Thanks, but no thanks. They were going to pay for it. On other occasions, people have... So we judge these things. We don't just, oh, we'll take your money. If we take it and you save for something, then we as a leadership have to approve it as something that we want to do. We look into things, unless they're so goofy. Some things you don't have to look into. You got immediately, that's not... legalism, emotionalism, embarrassment, competition, or approbation. You will not get your name on a chair for buying one. We won't name any part of this church after you. Memorial so-and-so, Fundy Church. Because some guy back in the day put up money. He got his reward. He's got a guy's name on a church. Wow. Something to aspire to. What is given must be properly administered. Believers must trust the judgment and leadership of those whose responsibility it is to administer these gifts. Everyone's privacy should, at best, be maintained. Concluding observations. Grace giving is one of the spiritual sacrifices of the royal priesthood. Hebrews 13:15 and following. Grace giving leads to the sacrifice of thanksgiving and praise. Grace giving is also a spiritual gift in the body of Christ. You can see the general doctrine of spiritual gifts, and through prayer and application, you may even determine what your spiritual gift is. You'd think that'd be nice, wouldn't you? You pegged it. You might have more than one gift. I pegged mine before I even knew it was a gift. Understood it in the proper way. I was called to the ministry, I became aware that that's what I was going to do in life, and that was it all coming to the surface for me. But anyway, giving is a spiritual gift, so that would be a person who, and again, it's not based on your economics or anything. You determine that before God if you have the gift of giving, or any of the other spiritual gifts for that matter. Now, if you have the gift of giving, so I have the gift of pastor, teacher. I have to function like that. I have to study, teach, communicate Bible doctrine. If you have the gift of giving, then you're on a higher plane than just the rest of us that are giving, I would think. But that's your business. You figure it out. Don't say it unless you're sure you got it. I know people can make mistakes. I thought I had the gift of pastor, teacher. Somebody says, no, I didn't. Well, good, you figured that out. Wouldn't want you going into this without the gift. That'd be a complete failure. Grace giving on the part of the pastor teacher is sowing spiritual things, while the congregation is sowing material things. Okay, grace and generous giving is not preempted due to minimal resources. We just saw that with people in Macedonia. This is illustrated by the widow who gave the widow's mite that Jesus made an object lesson out of. Not in her presence, but before the others. Because people came and they gave into this, there's this treasury thing where you dump coins in the temple of your own free will. This wasn't tithing either. This is above it. This was just contributing to the maintenance of this beautiful house of God and all that went on there. And these messed up religious leaders did it with all kinds of pomp and circumstance and big display and blah, 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 and dumped their money in. Kind of stuff. It's sick, isn't it? But this woman just quietly comes up and throws the widow's mite in there. This is a coin that's worth less than a penny that she gave out of her poverty. He observed this. That, assuming she was a believer, that carries so much more reward than all this other giving out of their surplus. So again, you first give yourself to the Lord. You're dedicated to Him. You want to participate in His plan. Be a part of it. And you don't sit around and say, well, maybe someday when I get money. You make up your mind. I know it sounds contradictory what I'm saying here. I already said, if you don't have much, you don't have to give. That's true. I don't mean before God. It's your business. I'm just trying to sensitize you. You go out, figure it out, pray about it, and get on the bandwagon. Giving is a test of love. 1 John 3:17, but whoever has the world's goods, and there's any number of you that have the world's goods. You do. I do. You have the world's goods. And beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him. How does the love of God abide in him? He's not filled with the Spirit. He can actually walk by a needy fellow believer who he obviously knows is in need, and he has the world's goods, and he will not step up and help that person. That's not good. Not good at all. We want to avoid that one. And some of you have and do wonderfully in this. Grace and generous giving is stimulated by the example of others, of course. Grace giving includes a principle of equality of balance, in that today's givers will be tomorrow's receivers. And you can get the details of where we went through this in great detail. A lot more detail than I presented here. All right, what we're going to do, it's a little early, but only about 7 minutes, so we'll let you go and we'll talk about SG3 next time we meet. The way things are going, you never know when the next time you're going to meet. Well, I'm exaggerating. I woke up in time to feel an earthquake the other night. I did. Went rumbling right on through the house and started to step out my patio last night, about choked to death. The world's on fire. So it's crazy, but God's in control. And hang in there, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, Father, for the grace that brought this assembly together. May you continue to work in our lives to bring out the best in us. In Jesus' name, amen.